How we can have good relationships among the devotees.
So that we can interdependent on each other, flourishing.
And so we can flourish being interdependent. I was also thinking about this morning. I'm reading a book called by Giriraswami called Many Moons. I think the book has recently come out. Hopefully you can get it on Krishna.com. I highly recommend getting this book. What this book is, it's a book about, I think, about six different devotees who have left their bodies. Hare Krishna devotees, devotees of ISKCON, who have left their bodies, who have died since maybe the last 20 years or so. And it summarizes their contributions and their characteristics. And one of the things that we see whenever a Vaishnava departs is that there's a ceremony and the Vaishnava is glorified. And generally people think, why do we have to wait till he died? This always comes up, because what happens is when the Vaishnava is glorified, everyone is purified by that. In fact, one ceremony, I missed the ceremony. I couldn't go, but my daughter went. She was probably 8 years old at that time. And she came home, and I had never seen her that Krishna conscious. Just by hearing the glorification of the devotee, and everybody, she said everybody was crying, because the devotee was so wonderful. And she was just going on and on about the glories of this devotee and the mood and the emotion everyone was experiencing. And she was only 8, but she was completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And so at that point, she confirmed something which I already knew, but by her experience, I saw the power of glorifying the devotee. And glorifying the devotee is a process of devotional service. And we are warned that criticism is a major fault which can have disastrous effects on our spiritual lives. So conversely, glorification is uplifting, it's purifying. So why do we wait till someone dies to glorify them? and realize that perhaps we were not seeing all their good qualities, but perhaps we were seeing many of their faults. Maybe we were overlooking their good qualities. So in terms of relationships, Prabhupada said that if you look for faults in others, you'll find them. He said, even you'll find them in me. As we know, there were some of Prabhupada's godbrothers who somehow were finding fault in Prabhupada and what he was doing, or in some way trying to minimize him. So even, Prabhupada said, even sometimes where there's no fault, an envious person will see faults. And the opposite is true. Even where nobody sees good qualities, a Vaishnava will see the good qualities. He'll appreciate something about that person. So I think in terms of developing closer relationships with devotees, number one, we realize how important that is for our spiritual life, that we need that. Despite whatever faults they have, we need their association. Even if you don't like somebody, their association can still be valuable for you. At least they're an inspiration in that they're engaged in devotional service, and without this association of devotees, we cannot advance in Krishna consciousness. And this is explained in Prabhupada's books. It's the, how does Prabhupada explain it? He says the root cause of devotional service is association of devotees. And you'll find a verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then that verse says, in the beginning it's a root cause, and even in the advanced stage, it's also necessary. So in every stage it's necessary. So we recognize, number one, that important principle of bhakti. It's one of the five main principles, right? the five main principles of bhakti of the 64 items. And one of them is sadhu sangha. Kirtan, deity worship, living in the holy place, hearing Bhagavatam, and sadhu sangha. You get this? Of the 64 items of devotional service, these are considered the most potent. Or of all them, maybe of all the items of devotional service, these are considered the most potent. Not of the 64. Of all items and processes, this is the most, these are the five most important. So, yeah, sadhu sangha is the root cause of devotional service. Okay. So now, we recognize, second point we recognize is our tendency to find fault. We all have that tendency. Where does that tendency come from? It comes from a lack of humility. We take birth in this physical body due to a lack of humility, due to a desire to be somewhat like Krishna, somewhat like God, due to a desire to be somewhat in competition with his position. What is his position? Why are we in competition? You think, I'm not in competition with God. Do you like money? He has all the money. You like women? He's got all the women. You like popularity? He's got all the popularity. So we are in competition because we want things that he has. And we're willing to go so far as to move him a little bit out of the picture to get it. That's where our propensity to find fault comes from. Any propensity to find fault has its origin in our competitive nature with Krishna. It's rooted in that. And so that's what comes with the physical body. It's like you get Windows, and Windows comes with certain functions. If you don't like it, buy a Mac. So we've got an operating system that have taken birth with. It functions in a certain way. And one of the ways it functions is that we want to be acknowledged, recognized. We come with pride. That's our conditioned nature. We call it false ego. We want to control. We want to be better than others. We want recognition. We sometimes minimize others to place ourselves higher. We compete with others to get ahead. Sometimes we're upset if somebody gets ahead of us. This is the program. It's been a program which we developed over many lifetimes. Carefully developed this. And now we take birth and the program starts working. Because we've been developing the program, just like you're probably all software engineers, so you know what it means to develop a program. We've been developing this program for lifetimes. And then when you see it manifest, you say, oh, I'm so envious, I'm so jealous, I'm a fault finder, I don't have any humility, and you don't like it. But the point, the realization we have to have is we're the software developers. We developed that software over lifetimes. And now the program is just working exactly the way we programmed it. And we're complaining how we programmed it. Right? I don't like being envious. Well, you programmed that. If you don't like it, you can change the program. So fault finding is part of the program. Right? Everybody does it. Why do we do it? It brings us up. So, what Shastra says is very, very simple. What Shastra says is we need the mercy of the Vaishnava. And you don't get the mercy by fault finding, do you? That's the point. It's either you fault find and get no mercy, or you glorify and get mercy. One of the conduits or connections to the mercy of the Vaishnava is to serve and to honor and appreciate. Even every Vaishnava has some mercy that they can give. At one time, devotees were with Prabhupada. I think Prabhupada was taking a massage, and the devotee who was giving the massage, Prabhupada said, please pray for me. So the devotee was taken aback. He said, how can I pray for Prabhupada? He's a pure devotee. And so he expressed that doubt to Prabhupada, and how can I pray for you? And Prabhupada said, well, you're a devotee. Krishna will listen to you. So if one devotee wrote me, he said that he was doing a program where devotees would pair up and they would pray for one another. So like you pair up with a devotee and you tell the devotee, I'm having this difficulty, please pray for me. And he said the results were amazing. That they could feel the results, that the prayer of another devotee was working to help them. In Christianity, they talk about, they have a book called the, what is it? Something about a wife, I forget the title, but it's something of the praying wife. So it's about the wife praying for the husband. Of course, the husband can pray for the wife, can pray for the children. It's about prayer and the effect of one person praying for another. So do you want the mercy of the Vaishnava? Or do you want to get the effect, the ill effect of finding fault? Now our scripture is full of stories about the fall downs of those who found fault with another Vaishnava. So many chapters of Bhagavatam deal with this, all to instruct us that it's dangerous. And then we hear, what do we hear? By serving the devotees, you get their kripa, you get mercy, you get attachment, attraction. You get so many things. In fact, one time Prabhupada was in Japan and he wanted, he liked it there and he wanted to start a temple. So he told the devotees, I think that were with him, they were traveling through on their way to India, said, would any of you like to stay here in Japan and start a temple? If you do, I will personally make sure you go back to Godhead. Prabhupada said, if you do service in Mayapur to build that temple, Bhaktivinoda Thakur will come and take you back to Godhead. So these are examples of kripa. Prabhupada once said, you cling to my lotus feet, I have the key to the back door of Vaikuntha, I'll get you in. So these are examples of how when you please the Vaishnava, you make advancement. Even, you know, you get what you don't even deserve. So you have both of these examples, right? Of the tremendous benefit of serving, appreciating, honoring the Vaishnava, and the detrimental effects of what? Offenses, criticism, fault-finding. Now, just to expand on this, we learn from Bhaktisiddhanta and other teachings, we shouldn't find fault with anybody. It's not even okay to find fault with people who aren't devotees. That's also offensive. And we were reading yesterday the detrimental effects that accrue by finding fault with anybody, by hurting anybody, by offending anybody. It's not just offending someone who's spiritually advanced, it's offending anybody. It can ruin our consciousness. Now I'll tell you a wonderful story. It will help you appreciate the point I'm making, that even if you don't necessarily appreciate another devotee, but how important their association can be for us. The two devotees were traveling together and doing Sankirtan. They were young men, and they had traveled maybe 2,000 miles. They were in North Dakota, and they were from Los Angeles. So that's at least 2,000 miles, right? I normally tell this story in India, so I have to give geography, and I forgot it was in India, so you know. Well, I don't have to tell you. Los Angeles to North Dakota. It's a good 2,000, 2,500 miles. So that was, they weren't near any temples. North Dakota is, I don't think it's within, at least in those days, within 1,000 miles of any temple. So they were alone together, and they were having trouble getting along because the person who was in charge wasn't being respected by the other devotee. He didn't appreciate that he was in charge. You know, sometimes we see those situations. Someone's in charge, but you may have difficulty getting along with them, or maybe you feel like you should be in charge. So it was something like that. And in those days, there were no cell phones. So only two of them, they would go out to shopping centers and distribute books, and each one would go to a different shopping center. So one devotee would drop one devotee off at a shopping center, and he would take the van, he'd go somewhere else, and they'd arrange a time to be picked up. So one evening, he came back to pick up the devotee in the location and at the time that they agreed upon, and the devotee wasn't there. And he couldn't call him, because there were no cell phones. So he drove around to some shopping centers, assuming that maybe he moved. Hare Krishna, thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So he was assuming, thank you, he was assuming that maybe it was this shopping center, this store down the street, and driving around, he couldn't find him. 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. They didn't know how to get in touch with one another because there was nowhere to call. So simultaneously, both of them had a realization. They were young men, they were young devotees, they were in a city all alone, there were no devotees. They were at least 1,000 miles from the closest temple. They were feeling uncomfortable being alone in a city. I don't know if you've ever told yourself, I don't want to go here because I'm afraid I won't be able to control myself. It could be something as simple as eating something or putting something. Don't put that in front of me. I can't trust myself. I might eat it. Or I'm afraid if I go to this mall, I'll spend money and I don't have the money and I shouldn't. Something, some fear that I can't control myself. So they're young men in a city all alone, young devotees, and they were both fearing that how would they maintain their Krishna consciousness if they couldn't meet up with this other devotee, if they're in the city alone. They were fearing, now I'm alone, nobody knows what I'm doing, where I am. Maybe I'll go to a prostitute. Maybe I'll get drunk. Maybe I'll find some drugs. Who knows what I'll do? And now I'm alone in the city. So they're both thinking like this. And they're both worried. As we said before, they weren't getting along. But finally, somehow or other, they met up maybe 11 o'clock at night. You think they were happy to see one another? They're probably never happy to see one another on the whole trip, but that night they were very happy to see one another because they realized how important their association was for one another, even though they weren't getting along. So I think these understandings, these realizations are necessary in creating better relationships. Now, another factor is some of us are naturally good in creating relationships and some of us are naturally bad. Some of us don't open our hearts. We're very private, reclusive. We don't know how to relate. We don't express how we feel. Others are the opposite. Very open, very expressive. If they do something wrong, they apologize. Others, they do something wrong, they won't admit it. So I think an important factor for us as an organization is that we have to realize that part of our service is to learn how to get along. And now you might say, well, is that actually a quality of a Vaishnava? I don't see in the 26 qualities it says that they get along. And I see, well, the real quality is they surrender to Krishna. And we see, you see, you read these stories of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji and people come to see him. He says, get away, I don't want to see you. You bother me. Leave me alone. And you read that. Think, what's going on here? So, are you two senior devotees are not able to get along for some reason? These are common things. And it's confusing. But what we understand, at least philosophically, is that it may not be that every great devotee gets along with every other great devotee. But it may not be a natural byproduct of advancing. It may be, but it may not be for some people. So in that regard, I think it's notable to be aware of this, that it's not just because you become more Krishna conscious necessarily will you always get along better with others. There may be some people you don't get along with no matter how Krishna conscious you become. You don't agree with them, you don't like the way they do things, they upset you. Maybe as you become more Krishna conscious, you're more tolerant. We try to be more appreciative, but maybe inside it's working together would be difficult. And therefore, I think it's important for us to develop skills, better skills, of relational skills, communication skills, and so forth, so we can deal with these difficulties. Because they're going to be there. They always have been and they always will be. It's just part of life. Right? You're married, you know. It's not always easy, right? And you chose that person. Well, maybe you didn't choose. Maybe your parents chose. But they chose a person, if your parents chose, they chose a person they thought would be compatible. Or you chose somebody. And oftentimes, we're just thrown in a room with people and said, these are the people we're working with. And some of us may lack good relationship skills, communication skills, proper ability to understand. Some of us may be more resentful by nature, more angry by nature. So to learn how to deal with all these things is important for our service. You could say, all right, maybe as long as I don't offend anybody, I'm not the greatest person with relationships, I can do my service. Okay, that may be true. I can advance. But I don't really think that's true in general because for us, because we need to get along. It's very important and it's very, so let's say it's essential. So if we're not good at getting along, we at least should recognize it. Another skill, very important skill, that we all need to learn is that when someone else bothers us, upsets us, like your children sometimes upset you, right? We know, right? It's not them that's upsetting you. They're just a catalyst for what's already upset within us. And so we need to recognize that. Sometimes people bother us. But really we have to see it's not them that bother us. It's how we're relating. It's how we're seeing, perceiving. And therefore we're becoming disturbed. You see in the life of any great devotee, how do they respond to difficulty? How do they respond to being mistreated? Ambarish Maharaj was offended by Durvasa Muni. Such an amazing story. You know, Ambarish Maharaj did not do anything wrong to Durvasa Muni. Nothing. He didn't make any offense. Durvasa Muni thought he made such a serious offense that he became so upset he tried to kill him. Could you imagine? Sharada invites me over to her house for lunch. I find out that she ate lunch before me. I get my gun out and I say, I'm going to kill you. How could you do that? What would you think? Yeah, but Prabhu, but. They think Mahatma is like crazy. Call the police. Right? She'd go to her husband, get the gun, kill him, he's going to kill me. What did Ambarish do? He didn't feel he made any offense. Amazing. Why is that? Because the devotee is always looking. Well, he didn't feel that Durvasa made any offense. The devotee is always looking at himself. He's not looking to blame other people. He's looking at himself. What's wrong with me? Fault finding, the basis of fault finding is what's wrong with the other person. Or what's wrong with the situation? I'm upset because of somebody, what someone else is doing, or because of the situation. We don't recognize that I'm upset, because there's a problem with me that I'm getting upset. And this person is just a catalyst. Like we say in America, I don't know if you say this in India, but in America we say, this person is pushing my buttons. Do you say that in India? You have that? Pushing my buttons means he's agitating me or she's agitating. He or she does things that agitate me. So they're pushing my buttons. If you push my buttons, I'm going to scream. That's what it means. Sometimes you get people who like to push buttons, and then when you get upset, they push more. Kids are something like that sometimes. But what buttons were pushed for Ambarish Maharaj? What kind of buttons were pushed? Compassion buttons. When Takahari Das was being executed, what buttons were pushed? When Jesus Christ was being executed, what buttons were pushed? When Prahlad Maharaj his father was attempting to kill him, what buttons were being pushed? What did he ask Lord Nisringadev? Please liberate my father. The very person who tried to kill me in the most heinous ways imaginable. Please give him liberation. So he had every reason to be upset, right? That was child abuse, off the chart child abuse, wasn't it? Trying to kill him. Threw his son off a cliff. Wow. Can you imagine somebody reading in the newspaper, someone threw their child off a cliff? What would you think? What would the child think if they lived? So, of course, these things can't be imitated, but the devotee is thinking, what is my fault? What is my problem? And material consciousness is, we're always thinking what the other person's problem is, and we're upset because of the other person. But the reality is, nobody can upset us unless we allow it to happen. That's the reality. True or true? Nobody can upset you unless you allow it. When we were young, we used to have a nursery rhyme. It went like this. Maybe you know this. Sticks and stones, you know this one? Sticks and stones can break my bones, but names can never hurt me. Have you ever heard that before? So if you're playing with your friends, and your friends are calling making fun of you, then you say, sticks and stones can break my bones, but names can never hurt me. They're calling you names. You're stupid. You're funny. You're this. Sticks and stones can break my bones, but names can never hurt me. You never heard that? No? You heard it now. If anyone makes fun of you, you can tell them that. So the idea is, you're trying to make me upset, but I'm in charge of whether or not I get upset. My upset is not because of you, it's because of me. So if we say, I can't get along with this devotee, we should look to our own fault. Well, what's wrong with me that I can't get along with him? I see this devotee and I don't like him or I don't like her. What's wrong with me? We don't think that way. We think, the reason I don't like him is because of these three reasons. This is what's wrong with them. That's why I don't like them. Right? We don't think, what's wrong with me that I don't like them? We just think, what's wrong with them, that I don't like them. That devotees should not think like that. Right? So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he is always saying, if other people's faults disturb you, then look at your own faults. And because otherwise, another person's fault is going to hurt you. It's going to hurt your spiritual life. Their fault is, why are you having trouble in Krishna consciousness? Because Sharda's faults. That's why I'm having trouble. If you said that, everybody would think something's wrong with you. You're having trouble because of her faults. I thought you have trouble because your faults, not because of hers. But if you focus on her faults, of course she doesn't have any, but if she did have any, if you focused on them, what would happen? You would go down. If you focus on all her good qualities, then you go up, right? You appreciate. She's such a nice devotee. She has such a good attitude. She always likes to serve. She's always smiling. Then you feel very good. But if you see faults, oh, she does this and that, then you go down, right? So this is the great test for all of us. When we're in some difficulty, Who are we going to blame? What are we going to blame? Now, the story of Ambarish Maharaj is very interesting because Durvasa came back and Durvasa learned that he made a huge mistake. And he came back to Ambarish Maharaj and apologized because Lord Vishnu told him, if you don't apologize, you'll never be free from this offense. So he apologized. And then Ambarish Maharaj said, you didn't do anything wrong. Can you imagine someone tried to kill you? Someone actually tried to kill you and they came back and apologized. Would you accept their apology? What to speak of, say, you didn't do anything wrong? What to speak of feeding that person? He fed him. He came back and he cooked and fed him. Would you bring in your home and feed somebody who just tried to kill you an hour earlier? I don't even know if we'd accept the apology. You might say, you might accept it and say, get out of here, I never want to see you again. Right? What to speak of, I didn't do anything wrong, please come in and sit down. Jai Jagannath. Is that amazing? It's amazing, isn't it? All right. So you say, but Prabhu, I'm just ordinary conditioned soul. I don't think like that. All right. That's okay. We don't think like that. But what's the goal? To think like that. Right? Isn't it? Isn't that the goal? So the devotee's always thinking, no, it's my fault. Prabhu, I'm sorry. No, it's my fault. Okay, in the beginning you have to fake it a little bit if you're not feeling it that way. But that's the basis of developing good relationships, that you're always looking to appreciate the service of others, to appreciate the qualities of others, and find fault in yourself. And whenever you're finding fault in another, it says more about your nature to find fault than it does about their faults. That's really what it's saying. And that's what we should see it saying. If I'm finding fault in another, then I should be thinking, what it says is that I have a tendency to find fault. I have a need to find fault. That's what it says. When I judge others, it's not about them, it's about my need to judge. Right? I mean, that's how we should see it. Then we'll have nice relationships. If we find fault with someone, we should apologize. We should try to support the service of others. If somebody outdoes us, we should appreciate it. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu asked the devotees, please give mercy to Rupa and Sanatan. Please bless them. And everybody was happy that they were making advancement. Now, if we're not Krishna conscious, someone may make advancement and outdo us. Maybe a peer will outdo us. And then we become upset. Oh, he's becoming honored, she's becoming honored. What about me? Nobody's honoring me. I'm as good as him. That's not the proper mood. That's the program we developed over lifetimes. But that's now we need to upgrade the software. We become devotees. So we have to go from Windows 7 to Krishna 8 operating system. Right? The Windows 7, my operating system, works fine if you want to be in the material world. But when you want to be Krishna conscious, you have to upgrade to a new operating system. Because the old system is just going to keep you in Maya. Right? For those of you watching, I'm drinking coconut water. That's why I'm drinking it slow. Devotees in Rochester know I like coconut water. But this drinking coconut water is a little anti-Varnashram because it comes from Brazil. And we should just eat locally, right? Of course, in the winter, nothing grows here, right? So you'd all starve to death if you eat locally in Rochester in the winter, but Another thing is to understand that Krishna is pleased and Prabhupada is pleased and actually everyone is pleased when we cooperate with one another. I mean, you think Krishna's pleased when you fight with somebody? Do you think Krishna's pleased when you find fault? Obviously not. And the reason Prabhupada is pleased is because to spread this movement, which is what he wanted us to do, cooperation is an essential ingredient. I would say it's an essential necessity. So maybe we're not good at working together, as I said, but we need to learn how to work together. Because that will, the degree that we work well together is the degree that we can help others be Krishna conscious. So it has to go beyond what we like or don't like, or what we're good at or what we're not good at. Well, I'm not good, I don't get along with people, or I'm not cooperative. All right, that may be, but we should learn, for the sake of spreading Krishna consciousness, we should learn how to be cooperative. It's a service, right? I don't get along with people. What's your service to get along? Because that will help spread Krishna consciousness. Maybe we're qualified to do something. We let someone else, circumstantially, someone else less qualified will do it. Maybe it's going to be better for the preaching if they do it. Okay, we step down humbly. Because it's service. That's the attitude. Not easy, is it? False ego will fight. But I could do it better. Okay, but in this situation, maybe it's best that he does it. I think this is probably one of the most difficult things that I've seen for any devotee to do, is to be able to work well in a cooperative spirit with everyone and refrain from fault finding and negativity. Probably the most difficult thing. As I said, even sometimes very, very advanced devotees have difficulty seeing eye to eye, getting along, dealing with differences, being encouraging to those who you disagree with, being sympathetic to those you disagree with. There was one Indian business guru, I don't know his name, but he said actually there's a problem sometimes in which we want to find people that agree with us, that we want to find people that how should I say, that just reassert what we already acknowledge and agree with. And the problem with that is it can often keep us limited to a specific viewpoint, which may not be the only viewpoint to have. And then it creates a dichotomy in that we want to push the people who don't agree with us away. But sometimes the people who don't agree with us, we need them to broaden our vision. They add another dimension. So if we can be in that consciousness, if someone disagrees, say, well, it's good they disagree. Let's see their point of view. Let's see what they have to say. Let's see how they differ in their opinion. Maybe it'll broaden the vision. Maybe it'll broaden the project. So you can embrace another person. If you can embrace another person's view, that's good. Otherwise, we just want to be surrounded by people who all say, yes, I agree totally with what you say. But then if somebody doesn't agree, they become the outsider, the enemy. How do we deal with them? They don't agree with us. Kick them out. Like Prabhupada said, that Krishna makes us all different. So it's good that we're all different. If everybody were just like me, the movement wouldn't be that interesting. If everyone was just like you, it wouldn't be that interesting. But the fact we're all different makes it interesting. If everybody were just like us, like one of us, the movement would be very homogeneous. It wouldn't have a lot of variety to it. Wouldn't be a lot of dynamics. It would just be every temple room would be white. Every kirtan would be the same. All the deities would look the same. All the cooking would be the same. All the strategies would be the same, right? You think it would be a problem if everyone in the world were just like you? Would it? Now here's another nice meditation for cooperation. What wouldn't you like about ISKCON if everyone were exactly like you? You understand the question? If everyone in ISKCON were exactly like you, what wouldn't you like about it? There would be a lot of things you wouldn't like, I'm sure, right? So now we have a viewpoint, and we think, oh, I wish everyone agreed with me, but just try to realize, if everyone were exactly like you, thought like you, did things like you, had your faults, what wouldn't you like about ISKCON? Probably a lot of things. Well, first thing is that nobody would be at Mangalarti. And then there'd be no hardly any preaching because everybody'd be working. And, you know, you go on and on, you realize, okay, if everyone were like me, that's not the ultimate answer. Although, in our dreaming, dreary, unclear consciousness, we may think, well, if everyone were like me, ISKCON would be better. But no, we need different people. The Prabhupada said, you know, nothing's going to be perfect in the material world, even in Krishna consciousness it's not going to be perfect, but appreciate that everybody has their nature and they can contribute. So appreciate their contribution. Somehow or other, appreciate everyone's contribution, even if you disagree. And what do you appreciate? There's a saying that when you see another person, you judge them by what they do. But yourself, you judge by your motivation, your intention. Why did I do it? You judge other people by their actions, but you judge yourself by your intentions, your motivations. Well, I lied because I was just trying to help somebody. But Sharda sees, no, he lied. So she's seeing my action. But I'm lying and I'm thinking, no, but my intention was to help. Interesting, isn't it? We see others by their actions. We see ourselves by our intention. What did I intend to do? I messed up, but my intention really was to help. I don't know that. I just see that you messed up. But so we need to look beyond just the action and think, well, what was their intention? And so if we're generous, we'll see here is a sincere devotee. He's trying to serve Krishna as best he or she can. That's how we see. And so even if they fail in some ways, even if there's some fault, we look to the motivation. And that's how Prabhupada saw. He saw, is there some sincerity there? Is there some desire to serve Krishna? Okay, there may be so many weaknesses, so many faults, but is there some desire to serve Krishna? If there is, let me appreciate that. Let me honor that. Let me tell the person, I appreciate that. That's how it works. So that we can easily see why it's so difficult to cooperate, because it requires a lot of reprogramming. What to speak of forgiving something that you think is unforgivable. It requires a real switch in how you see things. And ultimately, we see every situation as a learning opportunity. Krishna is sending this person to teach me something. So maybe I don't like the person. He said, but Krishna is sending me this person to teach me to be more tolerant. I find the actions of this person very intolerable. It's like, oh, good. Now I can learn to become more tolerant. Krishna has sent me somebody. If he doesn't send me somebody that I can't tolerate, how do I learn to become tolerant? I need something I can't tolerate so I can practice tolerance. So husbands and wives, if you have difficulty tolerating your spouse, accept your spouse as a gift from Krishna to help you become more tolerant. True, isn't it? You can learn so much tolerance in grihastha life if you care to learn. This is a big coconut I'm eating. Huh? In Mayapur, they have these coconuts that just keep drinking and drinking, and they never end. They're like Chintamani coconuts. So the whole, really one of the biggest problems that any of us face in learning cooperation, in learning to better deal with one another, is this ability to turn things around and look at the problems that we're having with others from our point of view, from what we're contributing to it. Even if it just means I'm being affected adversely by what the other person is doing, and then looking at why am I being affected that way? How can I change my consciousness? When we have these ceremonies after the devotee passes away, you think anybody says anything bad about the person? Oh, that devotee, I hated that devotee. They did so many horrible things. You think anybody says that? I know a few people would like to say it, but generally no one will say such things. They'll say nice things. They'll appreciate the devotee. Why? Because the devotee had so many nice qualities. And who wants to say, after the person's left, who wants to? Who would be so foolish as to get up in front of the audience and criticize and find fault? Right? That would be crazy. So why should it be any different when they're alive? Jiva Goswami said, envy is not so bad. He said, but when it comes out of your mouth, then it's bad. Because now you're not controlling it. And now you're hurting the other person. So it becomes kind of violence. Okay, I may be envious of Sharada. I don't say anything. I control it. I know it's wrong. I try to serve her. I try to be nice. But if I say it, then the envy is now, I've lost control. Then it's like swords in her heart. In the Bhagavatam, in the story of Sati, when Daksha offended her husband, she was so upset. In the purport, in the verse, it says that the words of her father were like piercing her heart, just like knives in her heart. She couldn't tolerate it. And that's why she gave up her body. So, you know, Prabhupada talks about the piercing words, how words can tear apart our heart. So Jiva Goswami says the same thing. That here, okay, I may be envious, but then it becomes violent when I express it in words, because it will tear a heart the part of another person. It's like throwing daggers, knives at the other person's heart. It's really, really bad. It's a really, really bad quality, and something we need to learn to control. But beyond controlling it, we need to change our consciousness, so that then there's nothing to control. It's that the fact that that's in our heart, we have to say control it. But what should really be in our heart is the appreciation. If you appreciate another devotee, that will make you Krishna conscious, and you'll feel really good, feel really happy. If you say something nice about another devotee. What to speak of, say something nice about someone you don't like. You feel really happy. You ever done that? Say something nice about someone you don't like? Try it. You don't have to tell the person. You can just tell anybody, so-and-so has this quality. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur always wanted his devotees to glorify the other devotees. He would never allow them to criticize. And he said, criticism is reserved for the spiritual master. That's his job. And the spiritual master doesn't want to criticize his disciples, but that's his service. But so he does it. But it's considered a thankless task that the spiritual master has to criticize, chastise. The father corrects the son or daughter. The guru is like the father. He corrects, or the siksha guru, or the senior corrects the junior. It's a thankless task. They don't want to do it. They want to glorify, but they have to do it. It's a thankless task. But we should not take that thankless task upon us when we're not in that position. Why would we want to take on a thankless task? It's not our service. The service the guru has to do, he doesn't want to do that aspect of the service. He considers it thankless, and then we take it upon ourselves to criticize others. See how foolish that is? Jai Jagannath. Navadaya Krishna Krishnaya Bhutanaya Smati Vachana. So, I'll tell you another important point to understand. Have you ever gone to a class and heard something like don't find fault, and the class was really good and it was explained really well, and you realized that I should stop finding fault, and you got very inspired, and then you found yourself a week later or 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later kind of reverting back to your tendency to find fault? That ever happened to anybody? So the understanding is that the mind is only a reflection of the heart. So if you try to control the mind without changing the heart, it's like, let's just say it's a band-aid solution. Because the real solution is to change the heart. So if you ever find that happening, it just means that you're making an attempt to do something without going deep enough to the level of consciousness which is creating the problem. Right? Because if the problem is still there, the tendency is still strongly there, you can try to fight it up here for a while, but the thoughts will always be there. So you have to fight it on a deeper level. And of course in Krishna consciousness, most of the work we do is not fighting, it's positive work. It's not fighting negative, it's moving positive. So positive means, in this connection, replacing the tendency to fault find with a tendency to appreciate, to see the good. The bad may be there, but we don't look at it, just like the good may be there when we see the bad. Right? So the bad may be there, but we don't see it. We see the good, so it's a positive. And then the heart changes. Then I'm no longer in my life am I looking to find what's wrong with somebody. And I realize, as I said earlier, I realize that because I'm not practicing the principles of humility deeply, I have that tendency. So I want to develop more of a humble attitude, more of a humble consciousness, humble action, humble being. So I realize that's the solution. It's not just, okay, I won't find fault. But it's, how can I develop the consciousness of being in the mood of appreciation? Being in the mood of service. Developing more of a humble attitude that I'm not the best thing. I don't have to judge everybody. Right? So it's a change of consciousness. That's a higher level of consciousness. Appreciation is a very high level of consciousness, and fault finding is a very low level, isn't it? Fault finding would be associated with the modes of passion and ignorance. And appreciation is associated with the very heart and nature of a Vaishnava. So again, we've got the Windows 7 program that's telling us to fault find. We have to get the upgrade. Windows 108. Goloka 108, the new software. You wish it were that easy, right? We just put some diodes on your brain and plug in the program and you get a reprogramming. Everybody gets along. They write this Krishna conscious software so the computer just impregnates in your consciousness all the right thoughts. I think that's called the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Prabhu, how do I get the upgrade? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That's your upgrade. Prabhu, I've been chanting Hare Krishna for 20 years, I never got the upgrade. No, that's not the Maha Mantra you're chanting. You're chanting Nishnish Ram Ram Hari Hari. Nishnish Ram Ram Hari Hari. You're not chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. For actually chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, we'll get the upgrade. So we see within our heart there's a tendency to want to minimize, criticize, be jealous, envious of other Vaishnavas. Very strong propensity, because that is the fuel that fuels our material consciousness. It's the fuel that, it's why we came here in the material world, to be number one. So that consciousness, it's still there, it's still underlying, isn't it? It's like the program, the software, it's still working. And that's why when you try to stop it, it's not so easy. And we need to replace it by something really strong, and appreciation is a very strong thing. My experience is, though, and I gave a lecture here 2-3 years ago. Most of you weren't there, I don't think. But I was saying that what happens in Krishna consciousness, one thing that happens in Krishna consciousness is that as you advance at a certain point, you begin to develop different kinds of desires. So right now I'm saying, well, you should appreciate the devotees. And you might be thinking, I don't know if I want to. I don't know if I want to that much. I mean, I want to, but I don't know if I really want to. I mean, finding fault is it's a lot easier, more fun. I get more gratification from it. I mean, these are subtle thoughts that may be going on. But then you say, Prabhu, how do I get to this point where I'm just wanting to appreciate? So my experience is that advancing in Krishna consciousness in a way that these qualities and similar qualities develop is that as you advance, the desire to develop these qualities becomes stronger. Because the realization is if you don't really want to appreciate, if you don't really want to stop fault finding, it's not going to happen. It'll always be there to some degree. But when you come to this point, say, I'd really like to be that devotee who always appreciates others. This is really what I want. I'm really attracted to that. I really hate it when I fall find. I don't like it. I don't like to hear it. I don't like to speak it. It makes me miserable to hear it. It makes me miserable to speak it. I love to appreciate the other devotees. I love and appreciate those who appreciate the other devotees. This is what Krishna consciousness is all about. This is the kind of organization I want to be a part of. This is what I want to contribute to the organization. When you actually feel that because of your progress in devotional service, then it happens. And that's how all these qualities develop. We come to a point in our advancement that we actually want them. We relish them. They're higher qualities. And our consciousness is now higher. So they're more attractive to us. But I can guarantee if you really are not attracted to the concept of appreciation or the concept of humility or the concept of cooperation, if it doesn't resonate deeply within your heart as something you really want, then you'll hear the class, it sounds good, a few days later you'll go back to where you were. Because that's where you are is where you are. That's where you want to be. That's where you live. We are what we are because that's what we want, where we want to be and who we want to be. Say, Prabhu, I'm so puffed up. And I say, why? You say, I don't know. I say, because you want to be. And you get offended. And it's true, though. We are what we are because we want to be. Prabhupada was asked by one brahmachari. He said, Prabhupada, why is it that the male attraction to women is so strong? And Prabhupada said, because you want to enjoy them. And he said, why are they so attractive? He said, because you want to enjoy them. You think the women were attractive to Rupa Goswami? I don't think so. He might have recognized, here's a beautiful woman, but it doesn't mean he wanted connection with her. So if we want to enjoy women, they'll be attractive. If we want to serve Krishna, then we'll see them as mother. Right? It's our desire that has to change. So if we're finding fault, then we have to admit in our own heart, I'm doing it because I want to. I like it. I'm getting something from it. Prabhus. Matajis. Do you voluntarily do something if you don't get pleasure from it? Do you wake up in the morning and take a hammer and knock your head? Anybody do that? Do you break a glass in the kitchen and lay down on it? Anybody do that? You put tacks and nails on your chair and sit down? We voluntarily do things that give us pleasure. We are voluntarily fault-finding. It's a voluntary act. You say, no, Prabhu, I'm just conditioned by the mode of passion. You voluntarily offered yourself to the mode of passion. You can get out of the mode of passion. Don't blame it on the modes of nature. Don't blame it on Maya. It's a voluntary act. That's why we do it. And so when we advance in Krishna consciousness, we'll come to a point where voluntarily we want to appreciate. That's more attractive to us. And that's what we'll do. So we have to be honest enough to admit, I'm doing it because I want to, ultimately. That's why. If you didn't want to, you wouldn't do it. You're getting something from it. Some prestige, some satisfaction in putting somebody down. Something you're getting, otherwise you wouldn't do it. Would you do something detrimental to your spiritual life? I don't think so, unless you're getting something, side benefit. We get some benefit. In our forgiveness workshop, we ask, what benefit do you get by holding on to resentment? And we get so, devotees give so many reasons. They find so many reasons. And they realize, yes, I'm doing this because I'm getting something from it. Has to be. We should never say, I can't help myself. I'm so fallen. It's just the way I am. Don't ever say that. By saying that, you've totally disempowered yourself from improving. You just said, I can't. Basically, I could retranslate that, and you just said, I cannot improve myself. This is how I am. Right? So what's going to happen if you say that? You're going to get any better? Who's going to make you better? You are. Who's going to make you worse? You are. Prabhupada quoted this Isa Upanishad, Atmaha. Atmaha means killer of the soul. So Prabhupada said, you have the instructions of Guru. You have the Sangha of Vaishnavas. You have all facility, the Maha Mantra. You have everything. And you don't take advantage of it. You're committing spiritual suicide. We want to say, oh, Prabhu, I'm lazy. That's why I do this. Or I'm just this or that. Why make excuses? What's the point? You either want to improve or not. If you don't want to improve, just admit, I don't want to improve. Don't make excuses. Because excuses won't help. how Krishna conscious we are today is a result of what? The result of what we do. Yesterday, the day before, last week, last month, last year, the year before, is a result of our actions. And where we will be next year, next year, next year, is a result of our actions in the next few years. It's no one else's fault if we're not Krishna conscious, is it? We have to accept that it's us, that we are who we are. So if we're finding fault, then to make it doubly worse, we blame the modes of nature. That's like we remove it, the next step. It's not my fault I'm finding fault, it's the fault of the mode of, I'm in the mode of ignorance, I can't help myself. Now we blame the mode of ignorance. So we're just painting ourselves into a corner and we can't get out. I have to go and see if anybody made any comments. Hold on a second. I have a question. Okay. Question. Wait a minute. We have Ajinkya from India. Ajinkya, at the time, for Ajinkya, it's quite early. 5 o'clock in the morning when we started. Okay, Sneha has a question. When people agitate us, the very first natural reaction is anger. Even though we know I am upset with myself, the emotional reaction comes first, then the intellectual understanding. Sneha, I answered your question. Did you check your email? Okay, so here's the answer. I'll give everyone the answer. She was asking this question. So, okay, intellectually I know I shouldn't get angry, but I become angry. There's a really nice quote. I don't know who said it, but this person said, your victory happens before you get in the arena, or before you get on the stage, before you do it. It's all the work you do before that determines whether you're going to be victorious or not. You know, let's say you have to prepare a speech. You have to give a speech somewhere, right? So where's the victory of the speech going to take place? In your preparation. It's all going to happen before you get there. It's not going to, you're just not going to wing it and go on stage. What happens when you go to fight a battle? You're trained. You go to start a company, a business. You've got your MBA. You've gone to business school. You've prepared. You've studied. You've done research. Then you go out to do your work. You want to paint beautiful paintings. You've gone to art school. You've studied. You've done all your work. You're succeeding. Before you actually do it, your success is determined. So the same thing with anger, that many of us have not yet decided we don't want to be angry anymore. So it's like we don't mind being angry, so we continue to get angry. My experience is that dealing with anger and the things that upset us, it takes place before the situation happens, not during. Or you can say afterwards I realize I shouldn't have been angry. Well, everybody realizes that, right? That's just natural, because you feel so miserable after you do it. Everybody regrets being angry, unless your anger was controlled and it had some productive purpose or productive result. But if before, it's the same thing, you know. I don't want to be angry. Anger is an action of the mode of ignorance. I don't want to relate to people from anger. Anger, as I told you, Sneha, anger is a symptom of intolerance. Who do you think you are to treat me that way? Where does that come from? It comes from pride. I'm driving down the road and somebody drives in front of me and I yell and scream at them. I don't know if Indians do that, but Americans are good at that. How dare you cut in front of me? That means I'm going to get home 4 seconds later. Who do you think you are to cut me off? Don't you know who I am? I have important things to do. I have to get home and watch television. Now I'm going to be 5 seconds late. I might miss 5 seconds of my television show. This is all coming, this intolerance is coming from pride. I can't tolerate. I'm in a line and the cashier is moving slow. I can't tolerate it. In Mayapur, they have lines that go for prasadam. How far do they go? They must go like, on Sundays in Mayapur, I see sometimes a line goes 400 yards. People are waiting to take prasadam in a line for 400 yards in the sun. If those were Americans, there'd be a riot. They'd bomb the place. They couldn't deal with it. The Indians are just talking with their family, having a good time. Because the Americans have a different sense of self. How dare you put me out in this line? There's not even shade in the line. And they'd be thinking, the Americans would be thinking, they shouldn't have a shelter here. They should have another pavilion. Why only one? Why not two? Why is it taking so long? This is intolerable. I can't deal with this. Indians are like, they're just happy to be in Mayapur. They're just talking and joking with their family. It's a different mentality. There's a more humility there. When we went to India in the early 70s, before India was modernized, it was behind the times. And due to the grace of the British, very bureaucratic and however they did things. So for the Westerner, for the American, they couldn't understand the bureaucracy, and everything would pay here, but get your receipt here, and take the receipt here, get it stamped, then bring it back to the first person who'll sign it, and then give it to the second person. And then show that receipt when you leave the gate. And all you did was buy a pen. Like that, you know, Americans are like, what's going on? They couldn't deal with that. They become very angry and upset. You're wasting my time, this is stupid. You know, so it all stems from this sense of false prestige, that I'm so important. I can't tolerate these things. So if we decide, we change our consciousness to, I'm not so important. I was giving a workshop on humility, and I came up with an exercise, and the exercise was this: to ask the devotees to meditate on how often you complain. Just to actually start thinking about, and I said, what do you complain about? And you have to write down all the things you complain about. Complain about the weather, I complain about my job, I complain about my wife, I complain about the cost of this, I complain about the cost of that. You know, then you realize how much we complain. Because the point was, the Mahaprabhu says, more tolerant than a tree. This is connected with humility. Because I'm complaining because I think I don't deserve all this. I deserve better. I'm an important person. Don't treat me like that. You can't say that to me. It's all this anger, is all intolerance. So if we change our consciousness, we can decide, all right, this is not Krishna consciousness. This is not how I want to choose to behave and respond to this world. I want to respond with greater tolerance, greater patience. These are all virtues of a Vaishnava, which are especially important for those who want to give Krishna consciousness to others, to have deep tolerance, deep patience. And as I said, Sneha in the letter, also compassion. Compassion, understanding for those we're getting upset with. Why are they doing what they're doing? Why is this situation like this? This is the way it is. For Americans, like, we go to India. Now, since you've been in America a long time, when you go back to India also, you question, why do they do things this way? A lot of things they do, they don't make sense, do they? Why do you do it? Because we always did it that way. But this doesn't make sense. It doesn't matter. It's just how we do it. So what do? You just go along with it. What can you do? Right? It's just how it is. So devotees who live in India, they make the adjustment. Then they're okay. They just adjust. Okay, I'm not going to get upset by these things, because if I do, I'll be getting upset every 10 seconds. Which is really hard in Mayapur, because it's a village. And village people, when you ask them to do things, you're asking them to do things they've never done before. Like actually clean, so it's clean? That does it. They don't know what clean is. Clean is not the way we see clean. They have a different standard of clean. Or professionalism in how they do things. Should I tell you a story? That's a funny story. It was a bad day in India one day, and everything was going wrong that could go wrong, and some things were going wrong that couldn't go wrong. And finally, we ordered a refrigerator, because the other refrigerator wasn't working well. And he came from Krishnanagar to Mayapur, which is 45 minutes by car, and he came on a little... We thought he was going to come in a truck. He came on a motor rickshaw.
Auto
with a flatbed in the back. It's like a motorcycle with a flatbed. This is not really how you would transport, 30-mile... So he brings up the... And it's broken because that thing doesn't have proper suspension, right? So none of it was broken. I think there were like six other things that went wrong that day. But then he wouldn't leave the house. He said, he was already being paid. And he said, well, give me a little donation. I said, all right, I gave him 200 rupees. He said, no, 700. So I gave him 400. I said, 400. 400 is like $8. That's more than he makes in a day's work anyway. He wouldn't leave. He was holding on to me. He kept like, no. Seven, like this. In my house, alone with him. So he delivers a broken refrigerator, but he won't leave my house until I give him 700 rupees. And he's holding on to me while I'm escorting him out the door. He's still holding on to me. 700 rupees, 700, please. Holding my shirt. I can't remember all the other things that went wrong that day, but would have been a good comedy show. A Day in India, the new television show, A Day in India, would have been a great comedy show. So how do we deal with that? We have to adjust our consciousness because that's how it is. So we adjust it before. And if somebody comes from America to India and they don't make that adjustment, they go crazy. Isn't it? They can't do it. And the Indians are there, and it's like, it doesn't bother them, because they're used to it. But the American comes, and he goes crazy. So he has to, so the same way in life, if we make the adjustment beforehand to accept, okay, I'm not the greatest thing in the world, I may have to wait in lines a little longer than I want to, people will cut me off in traffic, people will say things I don't like, my dearest friends will say things I don't like, it make me feel bad, so on and so forth. But I have decided to act as a Vaishnava. I made that decision. I'm not going to be intolerant. I'm not going to become upset. I'm not going to become angry. We become angry because we haven't made that decision yet. I'm good. Coconut's finished. Okay, that was about an hour and 20-minute answer to that question. We started at 7:30, and my clock says it's 8:56. So...
We have some guests who can speak about taking Krishna consciousness.
Taking it up?
Taking
it up and out. Oh. That's how to take it up. Krishna consciousness means service. Hold on a second. Krishna consciousness means... Material consciousness means I want to be served. I want to be honored. I want, me, I'm in the center. So, material consciousness means you picture the universe And everything in it, and you're in the center, and everything is coming towards you. And you want as much as you can get. And that's the conception of happiness. If I get more honor, more friends, better position, more wealth, I could be more beautiful. Well, just have the things of this world. They come to me, that's my perfection, then I'm happy. That's material consciousness. Spiritual consciousness means, take that same picture and you put God in the center. And so all of that goes to Him and you serve. Make God happy. Make Krishna happy. Bring everything to Him. That's it. Simple. Material consciousness, spiritual consciousness. It's all about who's in the center. Who's in the center of your life? You or God? So you might say, well, I'm in the center, but God's there with me. Okay. You're halfway there. But why is He in the center and you're still there? Is it that you want Him to facilitate your material life? That's not spiritual life. But we want Him to facilitate our spiritual life. So material consciousness and spiritual consciousness simply are based on the way we see things. How do we see things in this world? Do we see things in this world with the vision, with the idea of this is meant for me, or do we see it, this is meant for God? That's all. That's it. Simple. So, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness teaches that service is who we are. Service is our nature. And material consciousness teaches that material consciousness teaches that it tries to deny the fact that we're servant. What's that saying? I'd rather be a master in hell than a servant in heaven. That desire to be a master is so strong. Rather be a master in hell than a servant in heaven.